Hello and welcome to today's episode of Dr. Simone's Mindspace. So today is actually a very global podcast around the world, heading towards the East. And I'm very, very excited that very late in the evening, my dear friend Katia, and she will introduce herself a little more in detail very soon, from Hong Kong is joining us today, and we'll talk about her project, herself, and how she got to Omnivitality. And I have to share with you, it's a sunlight on a rainy day like today's Zurich, definitely to look at both you, and also when I in the morning get up and look at your posts, it's always something that lifts your spirits. So yeah, you're doing really a good job to lift people's spirits. So can't wait to hear more and about your journey. So I'll hand the word over to you now. A big thank you for your time.
Thank you, Simona, for inviting me to speak to you. It's always a pleasure, and I always like we met over, you know, like yoga and food, and we've connected so quickly, both being quite international and passionate about health. That every time we speak, there is something I learn from you, and always come up with really inspired and interesting ideas of what we can do further to just educate people around us more. Because for me, I got to this point in my life where, because I wanted women to know that there is so much they can do to support their health. And something that I learned through my journey is we often don't have the knowledge. We come to the point in our lives whereby we have the desire to change something, but actually we don't know what we can do, because the only option we grew up with is we can go and see a doctor, like a GP, or just like a family medicine doctor. And that's kind of the only route that we're familiar with. So just telling people about all the different options that there are and how they can be more knowledgeable about the space is something that brought me to where I am now and makes me so passionate about what I do.
And I thank you so much for saying that, because I think there is also what I like a lot is before you go to see a doctor, that you can do so much yourself. And sometimes, or many times, it's quite simple things. It's not the biggest changes. And I'm curious to hear how you support people in their ways. Yeah.
I think maybe start by how I got to where.
Yes, please.
This is a rebirth for me. This is a second career. I started my life in finance, and I spent 10 years working for big international banks, first in London, and then I got moved to Hong Kong with my job. And I was, you know, very happy growing in my career, but then something changed. The day I turned, I think it wasn't quite 30, maybe it was like 32, but that pace of life where I lived on the plains and it was kind of go, go, go life, suddenly the body could no longer handle it as easily. And I couldn't figure out what was happening. It's just like I was constantly tired, and I would sleep late into the day and still feel exhausted for the weekend. I lived in Hong Kong for a few years back in the day. We moved here in Southern London, and my mom came to visit, and after a week here, she knew more of Hong Kong than I did after 3 years of living in the city. And I think it was like a wake-up call, like, oh my God, like, what is my life revolve around? And then came a point when I was constantly sick. I would pick up a cold, pick up a flu, it would take me weeks to shake it off, and the minute I feel better, a week later, it will start again. Oh, I think this was really for me, and I would go to the doctor and they'll just give me a bag of medicine and it would repeat over and over again. And I knew that this is not working, because it's just like that repetitive cycle that just is not changing. Mm-hmm. And I started searching for for answers. And this is when I came across nutrition and naturopathy, and I really started to notice the difference. And don't get me wrong, it took me years to get to the place where I was, so the changes didn't happen overnight. It also took years for me to get to the place of how I feel now. But once I started noticing the positive changes, I got so excited and interested about it that I started to read and learn more and more about it. And for me, it all started with food. Actually, I love to cook. And I always thought I ate healthily because I loved to cook. But, you know, my eating healthy, I didn't eat like French fries or deep fried food, but my eating healthy was a massive bowl of pasta that we would share, you know, between two of us in the evening. A pasta you would make for a family of six disappeared between two people, and we would always joke that maybe our cats like had a portion in the kitchen while we were eating, so the pot got empty in no time. But I still thought I ate healthy because we ate home cooked food. But what I really didn't realize is that it's not just about avoiding certain foods. It's also about, like, are you giving the body the foods that it needs in order to nourish it? And a combination of like physical how like the food affects us physically, but also food affects us emotionally. Mm-hmm. And again, like towards, like there was a point I would come home and I actually had to go and lock myself in the bathroom to cry before I would come out to the family, because I was just so emotionally like on the edge. And it just really, like, all the senses were heightened. And I always say to people now, when we see this kind of symptoms or discomfort, we need to think of them as a flashing light on a car dashboard. Mm-hmm. You don't just put a tape over it to hide it. You go and open the bonnet and you try and look what's inside. What is happening deep inside to the engine? But typically what we do is, people will have headache every single day and they'll just take a Panadol every single day. And they'll never look at, like, why do I have that headache and why it keeps coming back? Of course, if it's like once a year a headache, it's a different thing. But if it's a repetitive thing, it normally is your body's way of trying to tell you something's not working deep inside. Please help me. But our tendency as a society, and this is just how we grow up, that, oh, let me take a pill and it's going to get better. And we never think about the fact that the pills quite often just plaster over the symptoms. So for me, getting to the bottom of, like, what was going on? Why was my body falling apart physically and emotionally? And then addressing that root cause, this is what really helped turn things around.
And this is hard work, right? That's also why a lot of people choose the easy way with a pill, because that's a quick fix. But yeah.
It's true, yes. And you know, many people can't even take the medicine. We know from studies that even people who are prescribed medication often can't stick to the medication regimen. But something to think about is, no amount of medicine can replace the food that we eat. On average, we eat 1.5 kilograms of food per day, which is half a ton of food.
Incredible.
How can you compare that amount of food that goes into our body to a few pills of medicine can swallow? It just really just such a massive difference between the two. And it just, like, thinking about it in these terms makes you realize what influence we can have on the body with food. And yes, it takes time for us to, we have to change our habits, we have to change our taste buds. But I think this is why people like myself, as a nutritionist, people like health coaches are around, right? In order to help people make the changes step at a time. Because we know that it takes on average 21 days to build a new habit. And for simple habits, it can be as little as a week. For very complex habits, it can be as long as over like 250 days. So it depends on complexity.
Exactly. Very important comment you just made about changing habits. It's hard. And it's people usually don't know how. They would like to, but it's really not so easy to do so. So here I think you have huge potential to support people to with probably not even the most complicated ways make huge changes, huge differences, not changes, huge differences in their daily life.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's simple things. And what I find quite interesting is sometimes you make a suggestion for someone that's free, like you need to drink 2 liters of water a day because someone is only drinking coffee and maybe like a glass of sparkling water with lunch. And you say that, you know, your headaches, your energy, your cognition are all going to improve if you can start drinking sufficient amount of water. And it costs nothing, right, to fill your water bottle. Like there are like water fountains literally everywhere. But it's the hardest thing for people to change. It's almost like things that come for free are even harder than things you have to pay for.
Yeah.
But this is why, again, like on my side, I've got psychology training, I've got NLP training. We can always, there are also people, right, who are trained as health coaches who have the skills in order to support people in making those changes. And quite often,
right,
it's about doing one thing a week. For some people, you do one step at a time.
Yeah.
And when they start feeling better, they get the motivation.
Exactly.
Then you can pick up the pace and change more and more. But you start with baby steps and it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to overhaul everything overnight.
So agree with you. Do you have any sort of maybe cases of maybe even yourself? So how you started? What baby steps, or maybe you did more elephant steps to change that made you get better?
I think for me, a lot of it was about changing diet initially. Mm-hmm. And I played a lot with recipes, and because I really like cooking, what I've done at the end is I've changed my favorite things to be the healthy version of the favorite things. So for me, it's very important that our relationship with food has to stay healthy. I mean, it's good to love food.
Yeah.
When people say, oh, but I really love my food, I really struggle. It's not a bad thing that you love food. You just need to learn how to make the changes to the way you eat and like changes to what you eat a little bit in order for the body to accept it differently. So food has definitely been a massive part of the journey for me initially. And I've used supplements, like targeted supplements, and I use supplements with my clients because supplements help. They help give that extra boost and the motivation, but also quite often we live in a society like here in Hong Kong, for example, right? It's always like, people are always go, go, go. No one ever stops to take a rest. But also, like, we live in, like, with pollution and so on. So, like, while we have amazing access to nature, it's also has a lot of other stressors, both physical, emotional, and chemical. So our bodies just need to process a lot more. And sometimes they have higher demands that may be sometimes hard to meet just through food. But also what I've realized years myself and also through practice is when I've gone through this journey, I've used supplements a lot for my emotional health. So in order to help me deal with stress and in order to help me manage kind of the emotional ups and downs, because I'm quite you can classify people as warriors and warriors. So I'm the one who worries a lot, just like genetically that's kind of how I am. And I used to use herbs and supplements in order to help me manage this. But what I realized over the years is it's the lifestyle changes that you make that have a much more noticeable difference.
Mm-hmm.
So now I know that setting aside the time every day to kind of meditate and set yourself for the day and then close the day with, again, some quiet time, actually, longer term, it makes much bigger difference than any pill.
Oh, I can so relate and agree with you. I decided a while ago because we have a child now as well, it became more hectic, and I couldn't really figure out what could sort of close and calm the day without adding even more physical activity. because I'm very active all day long. And I found that a quiet yoga for like 15 minutes is just before having dinner is like the best way of calming down the nervous system. And I have now, ever since I decided, really tried the best of my abilities to stick to that habit. And it's amazing what it does with me. It's so calming. It's really quite incredible. Exactly as you say. And I mean, it's not that I don't do yoga otherwise, but I think it's this ritual to close the day.
I think it's so important to have a ritual for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. We, especially as women, we're guilty of doing everything so important for everyone. Mm-hmm. And we put ourselves last.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I need to look after the kids, I need to look after the family, I need to make sure household's organized. Then I also have, obviously, like, career, whatever it is I'm doing, as my job during the day. And like, if the job is a passion, then I know myself it can take 24 hours a day, because you suddenly don't have the boundaries
exactly
that you have when you work for someone else. And really, you end up pushing your me time, your like recovery time aside. You're like, I think someone asked me for something, okay, I'll this goes. But at the end of the day, this is a road to just burning out. And then at some point, what happens, and I see it quite often in people, and I'm guilty of it myself, because obviously, like, I'm not perfect, and I'm still on the journey as well to improving myself. And then you like burn out, and then you crash. And then mm-hmm. it's like a wake up call, like, I've done it again.
Yeah.
I have, in the last month, given up all me time to others. And the reality is, right, if your cup is full, you have energy, and just so you have so much to give to others.
True.
As your cup gets empty, it becomes harder and harder.
Right.
So it's always, they will always say that, right? Put your mask on yourself first before helping others. But it's really true.
And it's so hard to do it, even if it's so true, and even if it would be so simple as this announcement, it's not.
Yeah, it's hard, but what we need to remember, we don't have to do a lot. You don't have to set I'm going to do half a day every week for myself. No, I will do 10 minutes every day.
Right.
That's all I can take.
Yeah.
And 10 minutes is not a lot. We just can't scroll on the phone for 10 minutes right? It's like, it's not that difficult, because if you start looking where the time goes during the day, you can always find that. And again,
agree.
Like, it gives you more energy and inspiration to do things faster afterwards. So you end up saving time. And it's a hard habit to build. It's definitely something, right? And people will fall off when they go on holidays and so on, they'll come back and just like routines change and so
mm-hmm.
on. But this is why we all need people in our lives who hold our hands through this time, give us the accountability or whatever the support we need to help us get back on track.
True.
And kind of be a reminder that remember that you need to have that time in your day in order to reset and restore your resources.
Absolutely. So if you could give us all a little glimpse of a day of yours and sort of your habits, you don't need to share all of them, but just maybe a little bit of how you set up your day and what kind of food routines you've introduced that really make a difference. Because your face is glowing. Like, I want to know the secret about the skin being so nice and shiny. Of course, the humidity helps too, but like, that's not the
first, but it's always from inside out.
Exactly.
But actually, it's what comes from inside. And but you know yourself, you have a young child, so I have a 4-year-old, so they don't always go to plan, and it like quite often the schedule has to also fit around my son's schedule. But I try, and like, he gets up for school around 7 a.m. and mm-hmm. I always try and get up at least an hour before him, so I can get ready for the day and have 20 to 30 minutes to sit down meditate and journal. And this is the hardest habit for me to keep, because what happens is, if he doesn't have a good night's sleep, or if he wakes up earlier and the morning kind of doesn't go to plan, then I need to see where in my day can I fit that practice that I got up early for, right? But then you always have an external factor.
Right.
And I'm still learning to work with that and not get frustrated by that, right? That your sacred time gets invaded.
Yes.
This is, again, like we're all on a journey of like learning how to deal with it. So then trying to find, and I think the key is not to just give it up, but move it to another window in the day, even if you move it to like the end of the day.
Right.
But then I really value family meal times. I think it's important to bring up the kids with the knowledge of how important it is to sit around the table and eat, paying attention to food and talking to each other.
Right.
It really upsets me when I see families out for dinner and everyone's on their iPad or iPhone.
I so agree. I had a conversation with my mother yesterday. She was in Sri Lanka for 3 weeks. They spent quality time as a couple together. They're both, my dad is turning 70, my mom is 70, and it's really inspiring. They travel a lot together. And she was like, you know, but what bothered me was that so many people, they were just sitting and everyone had their kids on their screens. And I was like, yeah, it's so sad. It's really something that's taken away from the kids' opportunity to enjoy a time of the day that there is interaction.
Absolutely. And it's just learning to be around each other and talk, but also our bodies are not ready for food when we're on the screens.
Yeah.
Our bodies can't like digest properly and absorb the food properly. So actually eating would have a different effect to the food will have a different effect to the way it's supposed to affect our bodies if we're not focusing on it. So it's just so important, and every day I make sure that there is at least one meal that I can sit down with my son at the table. And breakfast, usually I don't eat with him, because for me 7 a.m. breakfast is a bit too early, but I'll still sit with him and we'll talk. But usually I try and be home for dinner, and family dinner time for me is quite special. But
likewise,
what I learned is that if we're during the times when there is a lot going on in our lives, and if we're like stressed or busy, what I've learned is it's actually the tendency is for people to skip breakfast and kind of have a coffee and get going with the day. But what I've learned for myself is actually it's the time when we really need to have that morning meal to set ourselves up for a day whereby there is less yo-yo in our energy and emotion. So I try and work with the timing of my food based on how intense and how stressful my days are. But my approach to food is, if you eat the right things, it's very hard to eat too much of them. I like to take the stress out of eating.
Thank you.
Count calories put so much stress on themselves.
Awful.
If you ask me, if you put a pile of broccoli on your plate and a piece, like, or 2 pieces of salmon, you can't overeat that food. This is something whereby you reach a satiety point and the body will use it as needed. If you put in front of yourself, you know, like muffin and croissant and a cup of coffee, you can eat that endlessly. So it's all about like, what is it in front of you? And yes, there are things that are treats that we can still eat. And listen, my son gets desserts, it's absolutely fine, but he knows that dessert is something that comes after a proper meal, and it's something that we have like a small amount of, that it's not a replacement to a proper meal.
And
I think this is what people forget, that quite often people start their day with a dessert essentially, right? Like a chocolate chip muffin and a coffee, like a latte made with oat milk, which is essentially sugary water.
Thank you for saying that. I agree.
it's often about like, okay, what sort of things can I give to my body so mm-hmm. that my body feels like I'm nourishing it and I'm sustaining it.
And understanding also, I mean, exactly what you said about oat milk, that oat milk has a much higher glycemic index than regular milk, but people don't know and they think they're choosing the healthy choice.
Because we've been talking again, like we've been saying that people shouldn't be drinking milk for such a long time. So then of course we have this alternative that tastes delicious, creams well, and people love that. But it's not always as good as it looks on the package. So it's always just like it's trying, again, like making small swaps in a day makes a big difference. And yes, it takes a bit of planning. We always need to, like, if you want to eat in a way that supports your body, you can't just do it last minute by popping into coffee shops and picking up what's available.
Mm-hmm.
You need to plan a little bit. But once you get into routine, it's not that difficult. Like, this today for lunch, all I had to do was pan fry a piece of white fish, which took 5 minutes because I had a big batch of steamed vegetables left over from the dinner before. And I also had some leftover green rice that we cooked on the weekend for the family, where we cooked like rice with spinach and onion. So all I had to do is take some of the leftover, most of the leftover vegetables, some leftover carbs, and I always have a jar of like sauerkraut because I'm Eastern European, I'm obsessed about it. And then all I had to do is pan fry some fish. So it took me 5 minutes, but it just meant that I had to cook bigger batch of all the sides when I was doing
dinner. Eat anyway.
And so it's just about thinking ahead a little bit. And no one can cook fresh meal 3 times a day, right?
No. My mom used to do that, or she still does. In Switzerland, we have this still this culture of coming home for lunch, right? As children come home for lunch. So she still cooks even lunch for my father, who's still working. And I can't believe it. She doesn't really enjoy it, though, because I think it's too much. So I wish she would take a little bit of your insights and sort of, yeah, be more creative with recycling things she's cooked the day before.
I think we need to, and I'm always like that. And like, I pack lunch for my son in the morning to take to school, so they take mm-hmm. back lunches.
Oh, interesting.
But for me, it's always just, I have a big batch of salmon burgers in the freezer. I'll make a big batch of like chicken vegetable burgers. I'll have lots of like portioned meats and chicken and fish and prawns, so then I can always take something small out and cook for him. And then there is always vegetables, and there is always some sort of like carb that we've used that he can take. So it's always about preparation,
right?
But it's quite interesting because initially when he started school, he had to come home and he'll finish his rice or his soba. He always loves his like salmon is one of his favorite things, so he'll always eat his salmon or salmon burger or chicken, but his vegetables would always come home. And I would ask him why. He's like, because no one else has vegetables, and I feel like I'm the only one, and it feels like I feel uncomfortable eating my vegetables. So it took me some time to explain to him that maybe it's an opportunity to teach others.
Oh, wow.
But it was very interesting how social environment.
Oh, it's so important. Thank you for sharing it. Because I think, and I see that with a lot of my clients, especially young women, when they go to school, to upper school here in Switzerland and also other places, when the social pressure becomes bigger, you don't want to be the odd one out eating the big meal. When everyone else eats half a yogurt, you don't want to, because then you're the odd one out. And I think that's a big, big loss of actually, you know, health in young people when it comes to this kind of shift, and then nobody's really, really looking at it until it's quite serious. And and we talk about eating disorders. It's really a pity. I haven't found the solution for that.
You really hit the nail on the head, and like how the society has such a massive influence on, especially on women, right? Like, with all of the internet and social media and so on, the image has just taken on really new meaning, and there's a lot more pressure. And I think this is why, for me, it's about, like, I think that knowledge is power.
Right.
And we can empower women by giving them the knowledge about why we need food, how our body uses the food, and like what happens with that food. And generally just understanding the female body. Just, we never talk about like all the research, most of the research has always been done on men, right?
We
don't really differentiate with the results of the research between men and women. And we've never female menstrual cycle has always been something like
thank you for bringing it up. Yeah.
And I think girls grow up thinking, oh, I'm menstruating, it means I'm getting pregnant, I can get pregnant now, so I need to be careful. But no one understands that actually the menstrual cycle is kind of like a monthly health report card, and it can tell you so much about your body. And just kind of like sharing the knowledge about the female body, about like how to, like, same way as you know that if the temperature rises about a certain point, right, that something's wrong, you're falling sick. Same way, if you know how to observe your monthly signs, there is so much you can learn about your body. And then understanding how the food influences our mood, our emotions, our energy, our physical health. And I think that's really important. And it all starts with education. And ideally, you want to start educating kids in school.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be educating parents, right? Because parents need to be supporting the children when they're younger. And this is just, the more we share the knowledge, right, one person at a time, we're going to help make this world a better place.
Yes, absolutely. No, I was just, when you were talking about the menstrual cycle, thinking about what we're going to do next, the two of us talking about, and I think that could be a very important topic. And just to how to support women through their cycle, because a lot of women are struggling also with pain during their menstrual cycle. And I know from other women that have worked with nutrition that it does help to focus on nutrition during your menstrual cycle.
It definitely, like, food makes a big influence on how our menstruation is and how we feel during this time. Generally, pain during menstrual cycle, quite often it's reflective of just like inflammatory processes in the body. So for us, like looking overall, like why is there inflammation in the body? How can we use the diet to remove the foods that cause inflammation and add the foods that reduce that inflammation? We know that, for example, women who grow up eating more like fish, like salmon, for example, right? Like whether it's Japanese women or whether it's like, I think the studies are done somewhere like either Sweden or one of the Scandinavian
Norway countries. Probably the salmon country number one in the world.
Yeah, probably.
I assume, I don't
but
know.
But they know that they experience less of the conditions that
really
have inflammatory drivers.
Interesting.
Underline that. And I know it's a correlational study, but like an interesting, just like there is also experimental studies, the randomized control trials, whereby women with endometriosis, which have really debilitating pain quite often with periods, that if we use fish oils, so like omega-3 oils in really high dose, they have the same effect as painkillers. So we know that we can use the oils found in foods, like the anti-inflammatory oils in some of the foods, we can use them to our advantage. And it just like, there is so much about how we eat.
Yeah, and I think many times also we get a bit detached from our needs that our body even tells us. I was just thinking about these omega-3s, and While I was pregnant, I was extra in the mood for sardines. So interesting, you know, and I was thinking during that time, how fascinating, because I was taking omega-3 and omega-6 supplements, but I was like, that's very interesting that my body tells me that I need this nutrition right now. And I really like that when we have sort of the calm and peace to reflect. Obviously, during such a process, you may are hyper aware of what to eat and not eat, and that's a completely other topic where people and women are too hyped about it as well. Then it becomes also unhealthy, obviously, for causing stress, that everything you eat can potentially cause harm, which is obviously not true. But then here we go back to what you said about dedication, right?
Well, we know, right, there is a condition now in psychology called orthorexia, where healthy eating goes to the extreme and becomes unhealthy. But actually, many people ask me this, can I just be mindful and listen to my body and eat what the body wants? But many people don't know how to listen to their body. This is the thing, right? We first need to learn to be mindful and present every day, and to really understand and to be able to understand what the body actually needs. So it's a really great concept, but many people just don't have skill to be able to do that. But it's just like, it's like what you were saying about pregnancy. Baby's brain is made from omega-3 fats. So of course, like, you're really craving them because you need building blocks. Again, this is an important knowledge, is food is building blocks for our body. Right. Everything in our body is made either from proteins or fats. And this is something that we get from the diet. Yes, we need then different micronutrients, which are vitamins and minerals, in order to kind of tie all the processes together and get the communication going. But you need bricks, for building to go up, right? So the bricks for your body is proteins and fats. And you get them through the diet. And I think just that simple understanding, like understanding that you have like carbs, protein, fat, and to be honest, in my world, I say fiber needs to be to be one of those big building blocks as well. So it's four of them. But most of the people, they never think about like what are all those elements used for. And majority of us run on, you know, pick up a sandwich for lunch, and then, or maybe I skip breakfast, maybe I have a muffin, then I'll have a chocolate bar in the afternoon, I'll have a bowl of pasta in the evening. But that food has very little protein, very little of the healthy fats, but it has a lot of carbs. And carbs, we can't use carbs for, well, we can make fat from carbs, the fat cells from carbs, we can use carbs for quick energy, but you can't use them in order to build the body. And I think just that simple understanding of, where are the building blocks coming from, can help people change the way they look on the food in front of them on their plate, and what they actually put onto that dinner or lunch plate.
I agree. And then I think something that we are in Europe, at least, very blessed with is seasonality. That you get different seasons and sort of follow the seasons and eat what the season also offers. And many times your body needs those kind of foods more, or craves those more, if you once again listen to your body. But I have to share with you an interesting study that's been just released about the comparison between Switzerland and Germany. And Swiss people apparently, especially men, live longer comparing to Germans. And they were looking at different factors, including socioeconomic status, etc. But for both men and women, in Germany, it was the food. They eat less healthy than Swiss people do. And so therefore they live shorter. They have more cardiovascular disease, obesity. And in women, which was interesting. I don't know what they tied it to. The women's Alzheimer's is number one cause of death in Germany, whereas in women in Switzerland is only number three. So physical activity plus nutrition is most likely the reason. And I mean, here you see all these old ladies go hiking all the time. So I think it is really obvious that people are very active as a nation. And I think in combination with eating healthier, it seems to have quite a big impact. So it's very interesting. And I think this was announced in the newspapers. And so I think it's slowly but steadily trickling down to the sort of general society that food has an important impact on your health.
Yeah, and I think we've gone through a phase where everyone was like, we need to exercise in order mm-hmm. to be healthy. But I think now we need to understand that we can't out-exercise a bad diet. We exercise for just a small portion of the time every day or in a week, in a month, right? Compared to the time that we spend eating, the time we spend mm-hmm. sleeping, the time we spend doing other activities. And actually, we didn't touch on sleep today at all. But again, this is like foundational. How do people recover overnight? Mm-hmm. People would tell you, oh, I need 4 hours of sleep a night. I think majority of those people just don't realize that they need more. Yes, there is a very small percentage of people genetically who may need 4 hours. But a majority of people need between sort of 7 and 9 hours of sleep a night. But how few of us get it in terms of like quantity, but also quality of sleep?
Yeah, I think the quality is even more important than the actual quantity. I have a little self-study there. In terms of like deep sleep phases, I can share, I'm blessed with falling asleep immediately, can't even remember how I fell asleep, and have a very deep sleep. But when our son was smaller and would sleep in the same bed and being, you know, moving around, I was probably worried that he would wake up, or we would not hear him, or and he would also be more active in the bed. So my sleep wasn't as deep, and I suddenly became tired, which was something I've never experienced before. And I really think it was because my deep sleep was not long enough. I slept through the night. I woke up a little, but not like seriously woken up. So the sort of whole entire experience of sleep was still there, but the quality was completely different.
And absolutely. And like all women experiences, right? When we have young children, we know how difficult it is when your sleep at night is so disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many people that can't fall asleep, and they'll drink alcohol every night to fall asleep mm-hmm. without realizing that actually alcohol doesn't really give them a quality night sleep. Or there are so many people who live, unfortunately, on medication to help mm-hmm. them sleep again, and medication just knocks them out, right, without giving them mm-hmm. that repair overnight. So sleep, I think for me, whenever, like, there are a few foundational things when I work with people, sleep is always in the top three. I mean, blood sugar is always number one. Sleep and, well, stress is closely tied to blood sugar. So sleep and stress and blood sugar really go hand in hand. Like, they play ball with each other. And to be honest, sleep as well, because if we get a poor night's sleep for several nights in a row, we become pre-diabetic essentially, and we are not able to handle our blood sugar in a smooth way, which just has a knock-on effect on so many systems in the body. Everything in the body is like a domino. So you upset one thing, and then everything else.
Yeah, I mean, people who work in shifts and work nights, they have higher risk for diabetes and cardiovascular disease and obesity
Yeah. There are so many studies, right, in terms of how this disruption of your circadian rhythm, so natural rhythm of how the body works, on how it predisposes people to so many more diseases.
I'm making a mental list of topics we're going to talk about in future episodes. I'm so excited. This is really so wonderful. My gosh. Yeah. Should we give the audience maybe a little sort of sum up? So you mentioned just now the top threes that you have, but maybe a sort of idea of a small habit that can make a big impact on their well-being.
Yeah, I think if I have to leave the audience with just a few simple tips that they can be amazing. One would be always add an extra portion of vegetables to your plate, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Whatever you have on the plate, think, okay, I don't have enough vegetables, add one more portion of vegetables to that. My other tip would be, don't try and aim to conquer the mountains and say, I'm gonna spend 2 hours every day for exercising and self-care, because it will last for a few weeks and then something will happen and before you know it, the habit will be gone. Start slow. Even if it's just 3 to 5 minute breathing exercise that you do in the morning, but you can do it consistently, that's all it takes. At some point, you'll feel like, I want more, and you can increase it. But start very manageable, because I think you say to any person, can you do 3 to 5 minutes? But yeah, 3 to 5 minutes is not a lot of time. So start small, and also don't compromise on sleep. If you know you're going to go to bed late, don't wake up the next morning at 5 a.m. to go for a run. Instead, give your body the extra hour and a half in bed so that you can get a decent night's sleep. So that you have both the energy for the next day, but also that all your systems in the body are functioning optimally.
So true. Thank you so much. This was so really, really incredibly inspiring. Maybe you could share that next week you'll do some very exciting event, and I fingers crossed we'll be able to fly right into the event from the airport to come to Upper House in Hong Kong. So yeah, what is your event all about?
So we've been doing a series of talks with Upper House Hotel in Hong Kong. It's called Wellness on the Road, and we try and use this event as an opportunity to share the knowledge. And
I love
the
name.
With different topics. Wellness on the Road. At some point, we'll take it on the road, actually. But we have people, obviously, who stay in the hotel from out of town who come to visit, but also people living in Hong Kong. But the one next week is all about navigating hormonal journey and understanding female health, and starting from puberty through perimenopause and to menopause. So obviously we can't cover everything in a lot of details within that hour, but we want to give the foundation of what happens, because women's hormones fluctuate throughout every month, but also through the lifetime, and just having the foundational understanding of what happens to our bodies empowers us to be able to do something about it.
Oh, wow. I can't wait. So if I won't make it, please record it for me so I can listen later.
Hopefully, you'll be our guest straight.
Yes. I'll do everything. I'll talk to the pilot to fly faster.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. So yeah, thank you so much for taking your time, and I really, really, really hope for everyone involved that we can continue this conversation. So thank you so much, and
thank you very much.
To be continued.
My pleasure to come back and share more.
Amazing.
You're interested, or your audience is interested.
Of course. Thank you.